Blog Talk Radio.
You're now listening to the Talking Pictures Podcast, broadcasting from sunny Orange County, California. Filmmaker, journalist, and film historian, Paul Booth.
Aloha, as always, my favorite word, the best way to start the day, although this week it's causing controversy with the new Cameron Crowe film, but we're going to put that aside because it's the way I start the show. Thank you for joining me, as always. I'm so excited to do this. This is one of my favorite things to do each week other than watching movies, and the best part is I get to watch movies to prepare to do these shows. We get to talk to film directors, we get to talk to film producers, we get to talk to crew people, film historians, we get to attend film festivals. We just did a few about Newport Beach Film Festival. Right now we're concentrating on Dances with Films. Let me get our guests on here as I'm going to go through some stuff. Hello, are you with us, Jody?
Yeah, how's it going, Paul?
How's it going? Thank you for joining us. I'm just going to do a couple of quick maintenance things here, but thank you so much for calling in. We really appreciate the time today as we're going to discuss your film that's going to be coming to Dances with Films at the beautiful Hollywood and Highland Center. Dances with Films is a very prestigious festival for those of you listeners that have not been or do not know what it is. I always start the show by recommending a few films that I like to keep people interested in, checking stuff out that's in the theater or the Redbox or Netflix. We have so many ways that we can see movies nowadays, and some theaters are too expensive. Some of us just want to stay at home, but we got to continue to watch old films. It's not just about what's next, but it's also about what's next. That's why we're here. So, first of all, I just wanted to say I just saw a great movie that Julianne Moore won the Oscar for called Still Alice. Just hit the red box. So for $1.62, watch this wonderful performance. She played a patient with Alzheimer's disease. So if you had a family member, I lost family members to that, prepare yourself. There are some tough moments, but film is laughter and sadness. We have to appreciate both sides of the coin. The other thing I'm going to throw out at you is a recent classic that I revisited, When Harry Met Sally. Great comedy and about the never-ending question that we will not remotely debate today because it could be its own podcast of, can men and women be friends? If you have not seen When Harry Met Sally, check it out. One of Billy Crystal's best, directed by Rob Reiner in 1989. Like you see on the show when you look at the thing, the tagline of this show is we examine the films of yesterday, today, and tomorrow. So all movies count. All movies are relevant. We talk about film festivals, everything under the sun. So today we are joined by, and I want to make sure, I always ask the guests to just say their name so I don't pronounce anything wrong. So if you could just tell us your name so I don't.
Yeah, no worries. My name is Jody McVeigh Schultz.
Okay, Jody McVeigh Schultz. And
thank you for having me,
Echo Lake. Oh, pardon, what was that?
I said thank you for having me, by the way. I appreciate it.
Oh, yes. No, of course. Jonah, great guy, friend, anything to support him and his clients, and he's always got something great going on. So I was thankful that he shared this with us. We are going to go through some of the synopsis, and we'll leave a lot, of course, up to the director, because I cannot stand shows where the host tries to tell you more about the film or the guest than when they have the guest sitting there. But Dances with Films, so people know, is a very a tremendously wide range of films, from music videos, shorts, specific categories of shorts and music videos. Features are labeled into different categories. And this is what we're grateful today here to have to be discussing a world premiere, which I thank you guys for letting me see. I'm always appreciative to see something that's having its premiere like that, because I get to be a part of that, and I'm a filmmaker myself, so I know how special that is. So I want to thank you for that. Now, Echo Lake, we wouldn't want to discuss the ending. My computer went on a glitch, and I ended up not being able to watch the last 10 minutes, which is perfect because we don't need to discuss that anyway. So it was kind of serendipitous. But what I wanted to say was first of all, great job. A few disclaimers on this show. We're not censored. We're not affiliated to express Jonah's opinions or Dances with Films. Anything I say is my opinion. What Jody discusses is his opinion. So nobody owes anyone anything. And we want to just have a place where artists can talk. And so with Echo Lake, just my quick thoughts on this here. Great, as it was just a rebellious, beautiful character study. Could not have been a better way of describing it when I received this email. In fact, the word rebellious is what drew me towards wanting to watch it. And I liked that this film was just raw and wasn't afraid to hold back from its themes or its feelings. And that fits perfect with why I created this podcast, because I cannot stand censored art. I cannot stand when people try to pretend they're not feeling something, or I understand we deal with something. I don't mean it like that. I mean, when it's art, art is, you know, it's cursing, praying, and making love. So it's not always just a beautiful flower. So with that, right. I've rambled enough. What I would like to do with you is say, I always have to start with this cliche question. Unfortunately, podcast hosts are stuck with this. What is your main thing that got you going with Echo Lake, and what would you like to start out telling us about?
You know, my history coming out of USC Film School was as an editor. I started working as an editor because that was a good way to kind of work your way up in the industry and be telling stories. And where most of the jobs were in reality TV. So I ended up working on shows with great people, but shows where the content really wasn't stuff that I was interested in. So, you know, I worked on Extreme Makeover Home Edition, which is a big show, but the stories are very pat. They're very, you know, just like the most palatable, inoffensive television you can possibly imagine. So,
great way of putting it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and everything is just so constructed, you know, it's not, you know, everybody knows reality TV is not documentary, very, you know, forced to fit everything into this little box, essentially, so that it's TV friendly. And, you know, what I wanted to do is, essentially, I got to this point in my career where it was like, all right, I'm making good money, but what is this all for? And can I, you know, look myself in the mirror at the end of the day if I am not, you know, putting this to some use to do what I want to do in my career? And that's kind of where the movie came from. You know, I just said I have to be able to use the money I'm saving from working in reality to make the type of film that I would want to watch. And that's where, you know, the story came from. a very personal story, and the character. And I'm not giving anything away by saying that he's a pretty unlikely protagonist. You know, I think a lot of people are used to seeing, you know, the mainstream movies of today where a character can be fairly unlikable, but, you know, in the first 10 minutes, they better have something that turns it so that you're specifically rooting for them, you know, or it's not going to be a mainstream film. And this is not that type of film. Certainly, you know, there's points where you're going to feel like, oh, the main character is a jackass. And, you know, I'm willing to kind of like viewer on a journey where they really have to work to see what this guy's going through. You know, there are films that kind of inspired that kind of thing. I know Noah Baumbach's Greenberg. I don't know if you've seen that one, but that's with Ben Stiller. That's a really good example.
You know, it's funny you say that. I had that in my hands at the library yesterday and didn't grab it. I've never had anyone say, thank you. I'm gonna go back to the library today. I'll grab that. Thank you for that recommendation.
Definitely. Yeah. It's a really interesting film. I mean, I love Noah Baumbach, but it's and he does write difficult characters for sure. I think The Squid and the Whale similarly has, you know, some characters that are meant to kind of like push your buttons as you're watching them. And they're not likable all the time, but that's kind of, you know, true to reality, in some ways. You know, not everybody is going to, especially if they're going through a hard thing, which our protagonist is, you know, they're not always going to be their best selves, you might say. So,
right. Well, what I felt like was, I'm 36 years old, but since I was like 20, I've been a tremendous fan of 70s films. And
right.
I think it was because that realism, because that, I saw The Graduate and thought that was like the best movie that could ever be made. I thought it was like,
right,
what am I ever going to do? I should just become a janitor. But if this log line here, synopsis, obviously, for press, it's to read the log line. That Will, now here with you, I see written, directed, produced, edited by, we will get more into what a tremendous feat that is from a filmmaking standpoint, but for the character Will, who's a 30-year-old functioning alcoholic struggling with adulthood, when his estranged father dies, he inherits the family cabin in the Sierras, and with it, a new perspective on his family, childhood, and habit of sabotaging relationships. Now, what I love about this show is that people are as personal as they want to be, and I have seldom ever been personal, but what I wanted to just take maybe like a minute to say was that this film was very... I fortunately have my father, but when I was 30, in 10 months, I lost all of my grandparents.
Right.
My grandma died a few days after my 30th birthday. I'm not ashamed to say that I was a functioning alcoholic. So when I saw this film, to where many people would have, like you said, they have to be liked, or I could have turned it off and just said, oh, sorry, it hit me too hard. I was intrigued to catch the nuances and to catch the moments of when a character would say, I just need to be quiet right now, or especially I can say that I lost a relationship at the same time. So not that that has anything to do with the movie, but that happened to me. So to see how all those things can tumble, and to just see, to look at the log line and be like, wow, that was me. And I think that that's the true sign of a film. And if you don't go through that, and if you're at 30 and you haven't you know, had a bunch of bad things happen. It doesn't mean you're not living your 30s properly, but when a filmmaker can sit there and capture you in the essence where it's like we've just talking on the phone for the first time, and this film was almost as if he like read my journal and knew me.
Right.
That's what I really, really admired about it. And so I got really excited as the film unfolded, because I thought this is a chance to hear what it's like about someone who created this. Of course, we're not going to ask you to reveal anything that's too personal, or to say what's personal or not, or what just came from the writing. But because you're producing Naturally Goes with indie writing, directing. How much of this writing?
Oh, go ahead. It was very personal. It was very personal. You know, I actually have a great relationship with my dad. So that part of it, the estranged relationship part of it, is not true to me. And yet I, you know people where that's the case. You know, but for me, yeah, it was a lot of his character was kind of like if I took parts of my life and really like exaggerated them. You know, I haven't dealt with alcoholism per se, but certainly I've had times where I'm like, I need to cut back because I'm...
Oh, yes. I mean, that's the... Yeah, that's...
You know,
that's,
I think everybody's
the age, too,
that.
Right? I
mean, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, right. And he's trying to, you know, he's essentially at a moment where he should be growing up. And, you know, as you go along further in the movie, you see through flashbacks that, you know, him and his girlfriend are essentially starting to think about marriage. But, you know, he's not at the point where he's really ready in a lot of places in his life to do that. And so, yeah, it was kind of like trying to go to the... I had a writing teacher once tell me that I should write about the things that most scare me to write about. And I just think that's one of the best pieces of advice I've ever gotten, because, you know, when you do that, you're making yourself as vulnerable as possible. And going to be more worthwhile, despite the fact that it's scary, to get at those vulnerabilities and have those play out on screen. And then, you know, the piece about this cabin, my dad's family has a cabin. It's an extended family. But so it's, you know, we didn't shoot in the actual cabin, but that idea and the area, the exteriors where we shot with the cinder cone and the lake, all that stuff is, you know, a place I grew up going to, you know, every summer. And it's very, you know, personal for me.
Well, I noticed a lot of those. I've driven through some of those areas so many times that I noticed shots on the grapevine and... But where, what lake, and where was this specifically shot?
Yeah, so it was specifically shot in Northern California, in a place called Lassen National Park and Lassen National Park. And then we kind of combined those exteriors that are really remote and amazing looking. And there's all this kind of like really kind of the thing. I was like, you know, I mean, we hiked to get that stuff with equipment. So it was one of those things where it was like, this is a centerpiece of the film. And it's worth, you know, how difficult that experience was to go out and get that footage. But then the stuff on the lake where he's in a boat in his father's canoe is in Big Bear Lake. And then the cabin was a friend's cabin in Mount Baldy. So we're a little closer to L.A. for that. And just to the basic idea is that he's got to go up. I mean, you read the synopsis, but like he's going up to this cabin in the middle of nowhere that his dad, who he no longer talks to, has left him as part of his will. And he doesn't really know what to do because he doesn't really want, and he's considering selling it or something to that of that nature, and that's where kind of the internal conflict of what he's going to do comes from.
Well, and if you don't mind me, and it's okay if you don't want to say, but what is your age?
Oh, 32. And I wrote it's been a long process, but I wrote this when I was 29. So I was about to turn 30.
Okay, because I was going to say there was such an authenticity that sometimes I think it's the exact, and it's not like how everything's yin-yang. I don't like saying black or white because the connotation in our world now, but I feel like writers get stuff just to a T or they miss it. And I feel like that, you know, the great example in our generation is, you know, how did Matt Damon and Ben Affleck write Good Will Hunting? Because you would have needed that next decade to process some of those things of going through those ages and chasing a girl and understanding what a mentor is. And so I like when I see writers like that, and then like what you did, to know that you were writing it at that age, to not where now when you have writers that they're 42 and they go back and they write a perfect thing about being 34 because they can reflect and they can learn and understand. So to be smack in the middle of it, to me, makes it five times harder. The only film that I ever wrote, I was writing about a time in my life while it went on, so I didn't have to worry about getting anything wrong. I just thought, well, what happens tomorrow, all right, so I know that it at least happened tomorrow. So I took the easy way out. But your advice of, I want to repeat that advice for anybody that missed it, because sometimes we have people that jump in or out or they step away. This advice, if you don't mind sharing if you remember the professor's name, I'm sure you do.
You know, it actually was in a high school writing class, believe it or not. It was our senior writing seminar, and I had just a great teacher named Christine Long who just kind of challenged us and said, you know, the thing you're most afraid of writing, that's the thing you should be writing. And it's almost, you can almost find it by, you know, we were writing personal essays. That's how that advice came about. And you can almost find that by saying, well, what's the first thing you said? Oh, I'm not going to go that far. I'm not going to reveal that much. And then you look at the thing you discounted immediately, and you're like, huh, that's probably the thing I should be writing about. And so I wrote a personal essay that ended up, you know, getting me into USC Film School as a scholarship from that prompt.
Okay. That's just such a brilliant way. I just love hearing that. That's right. I feel so blessed to have filmmakers on. So right now I'll just open up the floor to you, and you can tell us just a bit about what the editing was like for you being an editor and how you feel about how the film turned out overall.
Yeah. Cool. So yeah, I am an editor. That's most of my, professional experiences in editing. I've been editing for 7 years. So yeah, so I edited Echo Lake myself, partly because it was a real personal project for me. And, you know, we had a small budget, but also because I want to be not just, you know, trying to write and direct, but also editing on feature films like this. So, you know, it's a useful credit for me to try to build from. So the downside of that was that I was working essentially the entire time during post-production. And so I was just cutting this on nights and weekends, which, you know, for those out there who do that on their own projects, they know how tough that can be. So it took a long time. The other thing is that it went from a very long first cut, which was 2 hours and 10 minutes, all the way down to 86 minutes, which is what the film is at now. And that was quite a process. Certainly there's a lot of, you know, killing babies in that, you know, that scenes that I really loved and still love, but, you know, you have to do what's best for the story and the pace and all that stuff. So, yeah, I mean, that's, you know, that was a really interesting process, and I had a lot of help during that process from Sam Zwiebelman, who plays the lead, Will, who only wanted to be credited as an actor. I actually offered him producer credit because he did so much in terms of creatively helping to guide. But Sam and Andy Radzuski, who's the other producer on the film, also the DP, lots of multi-hyphenates in our crew. But
So,
you know, they watched that first cut and they were like, you know, it's really good, but we see a movie that's 85 minutes in there. And I was kind of like, are you serious? Like, do you think we can get it down that far? Like, I knew we were going to cut stuff out because, you know, it was a cut with everything in it. But yeah, I was surprised, and they were absolutely right. And part of that is that, and I really appreciate them for doing this, they were just, you know, forced me to be brutal about not accepting something that was mediocre just because it helped, you know, maybe tie some stuff together, or it was a runner that went throughout the film, or it, you know, tied back into something that happened earlier. That really, all those nice little script kind of ideas, and like motifs, really, if it doesn't serve the film and it's not your best, you know, work, your best performance, all that stuff, you just need to strip it away. That was the process, and it took a long time. I think, you know, we shot in 2012, and we locked in, I guess, as late as December of 2014. So, yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, no, sorry. Just so you guys know, because I had mentioned we always have an educational aspect of the show. When he said locked, that's a term for they do a picture lock, and then there's a, for sound editing, there'll be a sound, you know, maybe they'll say sound is locked. It could be in certain areas like the sync effects are in, or now they're ready to score, or the music's locked, or temp music's in. So I just wanted to throw that in there because we do have people that listen that might be interested in editing and get to learn from you discussing your process as an editor. As we, in the next maybe like 3 or 4 minutes, so then I can give you the last like good 4 minutes or so to promote whatever else you're doing, or to mention the website and stuff again. Can you tell us how Dances with Films was? How'd everything go?
Yeah, the experience is amazing. They're really on point as a festival. You know, it's a discovery festival, so they're, you know, the competition section specifically is looking for films that don't have big names in them, which is kind of the opposite of what most film festivals do. So that really worked well for us because we don't have names in our film. It's kind of a small, intimate film. But yeah, the experience itself was just amazing because despite that fact, they really have their stuff together and they're at an amazing theater. They screen at the Chinese theaters in Hollywood, and so it was a big stadium theater. And honestly, I was kind of worried about, like, you know, we shot on a 5D, and, you know, it's HD, but it's not 4K. And, you know, it actually, I was pleasantly surprised at how well it held up on a giant screen. So that was cool. That was very cool. And they brought, you know, we did a lot of, you know, pushing our film on social media and publicity and stuff, but they also just brought a lot of people and helped us get you know, a full house. So that was, it was a great a night. And, you know, scary too, because it's the first time I'd watched it with even close to that amount of people. But it was a really warm reaction. People really connected with it, I think, emotionally. So that was cool.
Well, plus you get, for the people that don't know, the entrance, some call it the front or the back entrance. It just depends where you enter, where Dances with Films is. That yeah. side door there by the table where all the merchandise is, you're like 15 feet from the door for the Oscars and the main steps that go up to the Oscars. And
I didn't realize that. Okay, cool.
Oh yeah, and actually I didn't know that you didn't get to see this. If you go right around the corner from that entrance and you go down these big steps, are the steps that we see everyone going up on TV, and they have these columns with the best pictures listed down each column since 1927 right. till last year. And it's really
awesome.
Cool because as you walk up, you walk up and down the stairs, you see all the best pictures, and you can, it's kind of fun because you can go, I went with a group of people and we would go and look up each person's year they were born and then talk about that film and, you know, so it's a really cool thing. But, so Hollywood at Highlands, so it's great that you got to show in such a great theater, so much history there, and Turner Classic Movies has their festival there. So, a lot of great films right. are now showing on those screens. Besides anything that comes out, but I never compared TCM with respectfully like Iron Man or something. But with Echo Lake, do you have? And I just wanted to say this, and it's okay if it's said again because we want to make sure that people catch it. This was your premiere, but is there any screening set up yet next, or are you still nothing you can announce?
You know,
or we're
waiting for the next wave of festivals to hear from them. So hopefully we'll have some late summer and fall screenings. Like just throughout the U.S. But we're definitely planning on doing some more L.A. festivals, probably towards the end of our, or not festivals, sorry, screening, towards the end of our festival run. So, you know, I went to USC and USC does an alumni screening. So we'll definitely set that up with them. So people in L.A.
excellent.
Will see it, hopefully. If they haven't seen it yet. We're hopeful. Certainly, you know, getting a film like this into even kind of like mid-level regional festivals is still hard because it's still competing with films that have, you know, small name actors but still recognizable actors. And a lot
right.
of those films.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm saying. Some festivals now. Yeah, it's almost like there's not indie film when indie film has a two-time Oscar winner. But that's
right.
really cool. You know,
right.
Dances
right.
with Films is definitely, as you know, a great start. And I want to give you the next 2 minutes if you want to promote the website or any social media of yours that you can they can join, or if there's anything else you wanted to promote,
yeah.
just take the next 2 minutes. It's your floor. Go ahead.
For sure. Thanks. You can find out more about us on echolakefilm.com. Twitter, we are Echo Lake Film, and Instagram, Echo Lake Film, and on Facebook, we're Echo Lake Movie. Google Echo Lake. There's actually another Echo Lake out there from like 2000. We are not that one. We are not a horror film, I promise. Yeah. Find us on the website or on Facebook. We're always updating about future screenings and stuff. So, hopefully there'll be a bunch of press coming out following the screening. We already start talking to distributors. So, I'm thinking 6 months, 9 months down the line, we'll have a VOD release. Keep up to date with us. on the website, echolakefilm.com.
Well, yeah. And please and everyone yeah. know that these things do, it's become very tricky. The market changes every day. I just got a press release today about films getting released to YouTube. So now YouTube is becoming a distribution
yeah,
deal.
Doing that
so,
as well. Right.
So that is just, that's pure craziness. That's a whole other podcast. But as right. we head into our last 90 seconds, we wanted to say thank you so much, Jody. And we do send our thoughts for the little audio snip that had to happen. And also, we appreciate that you let us see the screener and the team send you well wishes on the film. And
thank you.
I'm going to let you go here in about 20 seconds to do the final closing maintenance. But I just want to say, now that you've been on the show, you're part of what we call our Talking Pictures family tree. So feel free to drop me an email or you know, whatever, come back anytime, let us know where your film's at, if it's going to have a next screening, a release, and we'll let you talk for a few minutes, or we'll just promote the information. So, you know, we wish you well, and congratulations again on this screening, and, you know, we look forward to talking to you in the near future.
Thanks, Paul. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
Excellent, and you have a great afternoon.
All right, thanks.
Thank you, everyone. That was Jody, great director who made Echo Lake that just screened at Dances with Films. We appreciate you for joining us for this episode. We appreciate the time. Aloha from all of us at Talking Pictures. And like I always say, make sure and watch a good movie tonight.
Thank you for listening to the Talking Pictures Podcast, real conversation and movie-induced inspiration.